to Tuned to Yesterday, broadcasting programs from radio's past. I'm your host, Mark the Villainier, bringing you an hour of horror. Later on, a story on murder at midnight from 1946, but right now, it's The Weird Circle. A syndicated broadcast from 1945 featuring the Wilkie Collins story, The Ghost's Touch.
Again, the immortal tale, The Ghost's Touch.
Is it true that when you are very close to death, the dead are really able to reach out to protect you? I don't know, but Ralph Vant and I had been married only a few months when he died. We had been so completely and deeply in love that the memory of the happiness we had found is a thing which will always dominate my life. Well, John Stevens, one of Ralph's best friends, had invited me to spend some time with him on the coast where he had a large house. It was in the town where I had first met Ralph. Mrs. Stewart, my housekeeper and companion, went with me, and Paul Weston, another of Ralph's closest friends, was also there. But he lived in his own house nearby. I had been enjoying my stay there immensely. John had not been with us much, but Mrs. Stewart and I enjoyed the park and the beach. John had been particularly careful about my food, a fact which greatly pleased me. One morning, Mrs. Stewart and I had just returned from the beach. We were standing in the great front hall of the house when she brought up something I know had been on both our minds ever since we'd arrived.
My... quiet in this big old house?
Hasn't it been quiet, Mrs. Stewart? You know, I can remember when this was one of the liveliest houses in St. Anne's. And John was one of the jolliest men alive.
Sort of gives me the willies, Mrs. Vant. Something kind of brooding here. No one ever around this part of the house. The servants are all way off in the back there.
Has that seemed strange to you? You know, I thought that maybe I was just disappointed, comparing it with the way I remembered it when Ralph and I were here together.
Oh, no, ma'am. There's something funny here. You mark my words. I didn't want to say nothing, hoping not to worry you. But Mr. John has acted so strange, too.
He's a lot more thoughtful than he ever was before.
And then, there's that funny smell.
Yes. I've smelled that, too. But I thought it was just my imagination.
And the strange way Mr. John looks at you after breakfast, when he gets up so solemn-like and goes up into that room at the head of the stairs. He never comes out again till dinner. What's in that room anyway, Mrs. Vant?
Well, I don't know. It's study of some sort, I guess, where John's doing some work.
You know, yesterday I got hunting for that smell, and I traced it right to that door. I sniffed all around there and tried to decide what it was. I heard something in there, too.
What?
Mr. John was in there. I could hear him muttering to himself. No words, mind you, just muttering. And every once in a while, it sounded as though he was stirring something in the glass. Finally, guess what he said?
Oh, Mrs. Stewart, I think you've been imagining things. We're letting ourselves get nervous over something that's probably nothing at all.
Well, he said, at last. Now I'm certain this will work. And just then, he came toward the door, so I ran back to my room and shut the door.
Well, I don't think he'd mind if we went and paid him a visit. Then we can see what he's doing. I wonder if he's up there now.
Oh, my goodness, that startled me.
That's the front door.
Why, it's Mr. Paul. I can see him through the glass from the door. I'll just let him in. It takes these servants here so long to get from way back where they are.
Oh, hello, Mrs. Stewart. Is Mrs. Vant here?
Hello, Paul. Come on in.
Oh. Why, Dorothy, what are you standing there like that for? You look worried. And as though you're just about to do something about it.
Well, Paul, as a matter of fact, we were just going up to pay John a visit in his study. There at the head of the stairs.
Study? Why, Dorothy, didn't he tell you what that is?
No.
That's a laboratory. And he's forbidden everyone to come in there. Practically on pain of death.
Well, he hasn't forbidden me, and I'm going to find out what goes on in there. I think that was a little mean of him.
Oh, Mrs. Vant, do you think you'd better?
Certainly I do. And I'm going up now.
Well, I might as well get hung for a sheep as a lamb. I'll come along, too. Come on, Mrs. Stewart.
Well,
You aren't frightened, are you, Mrs. Stewart?
No telling what we may find.
Well, it can't be too awful. John's no demon, anyway.
No answer. Maybe he's gone out. I'm going to look and see.
Be careful, Mrs. Ant.
Get out. I told you. Oh, Dorothy, come in. I didn't realize it was you.
Well, we're all here, John. We came up to pay you a little visit.
Fine. Come on in, but shut the door.
Hello, Paul.
When did you arrive? Mm-hmm.
Just came in. Dorothy said she wanted to come up here. I told her we'd all been forbidden, but she insisted, so my curiosity got the better of me, too.
Well, that's fine. I'm really glad you did. This is a good day for me.
This is really magnificent.
Yes, Dorothy. What do you think of my private domain?
Well, if it's big enough, I'll say that for it. It's a little frightening.
Yeah, don't smell so good to me either.
Mrs. Stewart doesn't understand experiments the way we do, does she, Dorothy?
No, I don't, Mr. John. After seeing Mrs. Zant fooling with them dangerous chemicals, I don't know as I want to either.
What's that, Dorothy? You?
Why, yes, Paul, I've been doing some experiments. Just for fun, mostly, but it does take up my time since I'm alone so much. That's why I think it was so unfair of John not to tell me he had such a wonderful laboratory here.
Well, Dorothy, I've been saving that for later, until this experiment is well underway. I've been hoping we might work together very soon.
John, what are those tables over there? They look like...
They're dissecting tables? Yes, that's what they are.
Well, of course, if you're going in for anatomy on the side, I'm afraid you'll leave me way behind.
Why, no, my dear, quite the contrary. I had hoped you'd follow right along. I'm sure you will with this new experiment.
Well, you've got to tell us now what this experiment is. You've certainly got our curiosity aroused.
Now, I'll tell you, of course. I have finally developed a new formula. This is a chemical part, which will eventually make a subject absolutely impervious to pain. That is, I will be able to operate without the use of anesthetics. Perform any sort of operation I wish.
How does it work?
I feed small doses of a certain formula, a very dangerous one, by the way, to the patient's in his food. Dangerous because while he's taking them, the patient occasionally falls into semi-conscious states, in which he is very close to death. Then, when a certain stage is reached, there is one more dose, which the patient must drink straight, without any other food. Then the subject becomes unconscious of any pain whatever.
But what's the purpose of that? Surely the development of anesthetics.
But this, you see, leaves the scientists free to operate on conscious living animals, without the stopping of some functions brought on by anesthetics. And this never wears off.
Have you ever tried it?
Several times, my dear, and with success. I am just waiting now to try my greatest experiment of the lot. To use my formula on the most complicated of living organisms, the human.
But, John, you're not going to go on with this, are you?
Well, certainly. Why should I stop now? Especially when I'm so near the final experiment.
Do you mind, John, if Mrs. Stewart and I go down to the beach? I'm afraid the air in here has made me a little dizzy.
That's a good idea, Dorothy. We'll come right along to walk with you.
By all means, go ahead. Do get plenty of fresh air, my dear. I hope you'll see more of the laboratory later. Much more.
I wondered then what it was in John's look that startled me. Or was it something in his voice? A chill of apprehension made me turn and hurry ahead of Mrs. Stewart out into the cool seashore air. I was sure that John was telling me something, saying something to me alone. And I was afraid even then to let myself believe what I thought it was. Mrs. Stewart and I walked through a little park that lay between the house and the beach. It was a place of many wonderful memories to me, the place where Ralph had first kissed me. We passed the tree where Ralph and I had stood that day, and Mrs. Stewart, bless her, knew what I felt as we came to the spot. She looked at me.
These memories aren't going to spoil your visit now, are they, Mrs. Zant? You know, there's a lot of things a person has to live with all her life.
Oh, no, Mrs. Stewart. My memories of him wouldn't spoil anything. They're too beautiful.
Well, I just thought from the way you were looking over at that tree, the one...
You know, I'm going over and touch that tree. Just for luck. I feel as though I need some luck right now.
Mrs. Ant, what's wrong? What are you looking like that for? As though you'd seen a ghost.
Oh, Mrs. Stewart, I...
Where are you? Mrs. Ant, can't you see me here?
So you're looking at me as though you've gone blind. Mrs. Sand. Mrs. Sand. Mrs. Sand.
No, I'm not blind. I can see everything. The trees, the grass, the whole park.
But you've gone. I can't hear you anymore. I can't see you. Mrs. Stewart. Mrs. Stewart.
You remembered, didn't you, Dorothy? You're not afraid.
Oh, Ralph. You're here. It seems as though I can feel your hand on mine. But I can't see you.
I'm right here beside you, darling. Always beside you.
You've been gone so long, Ralph.
I'm always beside you.
But I haven't seen you. I haven't been with you before.
Dorothy. Dorothy, darling. It can't be for long this time either. They're coming soon. They're on their way now.
Who, my dearest?
All of them. Don't forget the others. They'll be here. Don't forget the others.
Why can't I see you, Ralph, when I want to so much? I can still feel you. It seems as though you have your arm around me. Oh, Ralph.
Oh, Ralph. I'm here, though. Right here with you, my darling.
Why didn't you let me know before that we were so near to each other?
Because you had to come a long way to me first. And now, it's time for you to know it certainly. You already know why.
Are you here to protect me? You are. You are, I know it. But from what, Ralph? From what?
Dorothy! Dorothy!
Mrs. Sand! Oh, thank heavens, Mrs. Sand!
You are, aren't you, Ralph? You will protect me. I'll come back to see you here, Ralph. I'll come back.
Ralph! Where are you? Why don't you answer? Oh, Ralph, where are you?
Dorothy, it's all right. Dorothy, can't you hear me? Can't you see me?
Oh, Paul. Paul, it's you.
Yes, Dorothy. Do you feel all right?
Oh,
Mrs. Stewart.
Oh, Mrs. Dent. I ran and found Mr. Paul as fast as I could. You stood there looking straight at me and you wouldn't answer me. You didn't even see me when I put my hand up in front of your face.
Oh,
you gave me an awful fright.
Mrs. Stewart came running for us. She said you seemed to have gone into a trance.
I came as soon as I could. She's all right now, isn't she?
Yes, now she is. But it certainly is strange.
Not strange at all. In fact, rather to be expected.
Why, Mr. John, Mrs. Vant hasn't ever had anything like that before. You didn't even see how she was. Mr. Paul here can tell you.
Why expected, John?
Oh, perhaps the air in the laboratory upset her. Perhaps something she ate. Who knows? The shock of Ralph's passing away hasn't really left her yet, has it, my dear?
I think we're imagining things.
I'm afraid that perhaps the food my cook has been serving has been a bit rich these past few days. I spoke to her about it this morning.
You all right now, Mrs. Zant?
Oh, quite all right, thank you. I think we'd better go down to the beach.
I'll come along with you, Dorothy.
If you'll excuse me, I must get back to the laboratory. My dog has been acting rather strangely in the last few minutes. Something very interesting may develop. Will you excuse me?
Certainly, John. We'll be back shortly.
Don't hurry. Dinner won't be ready for a while, and that's all you need to be back for. I'll see you later.
Dorothy, I don't like this at all.
Are you afraid of something, Paul?
Mr. Paul needs this funny spell you just had, and I agree with him.
It was very strange, but it was very wonderful.
Tell me, Dorothy, you know something about chemistry. Would it be possible for John actually to do what he says he has done?
Well, there are a great many strange things that can be done with chemistry, Paul. And I believe, yes, that a mind bent on such an insane purpose could probably develop such a combination.
But wouldn't it be very dangerous?
You're thinking of that spell I just had in connection with it, aren't you?
Well, he did say some strange things there in the laboratory.
And you may be very right, too, Paul, in suspecting him. I may already have been...
Dorothy!
Oh, Mrs. Sand, no. Please, let's go home today.
But, Dorothy, if you think...
No, Paul. Something happened when I was standing under that tree. I talked to Ralph.
But, Dorothy...
And I promised to go back to talk to him again tomorrow. You see, I have to stay here now. Because I must talk to him again.
It isn't possible.
I may be in great danger, Cole. Even this minute, here with you on this sunny beach, I may be very near to death. But I want to see whether what I believe is true. Because perhaps I am so close to death that the spirit of the man who loves me can reach across the narrow space that divides us and protect me. If that is so, I will have discovered more than 1,000 insane experiments can prove. You see, I have to stay now.
But Dorothy, hasn't he protected you already? Hasn't he warned you?
No, Paul. He's waiting for something. Something else. I think I know what.
Didn't he say?
No, but there will be more. He told me to come back. He wouldn't have done that if there weren't more, would he?
Shall I have the main dish brought in? Are you both ready? I think you'll find the dinner very good tonight. Since I spoke to the cook this morning, she... Oh, here it is now.
Are you sure you feel well enough to eat, Dorothy?
Yes, thank you, Paul. I feel very well now.
The afternoon must... Oh, Rogers, I believe you've mixed the plates. That one is for Mrs. Vance.
That's all right, John. I don't believe I'll have much dinner anyway. I'm not very hungry. Give Dorothy mine.
But I insist. Dorothy's is really quite special.
I... Listen. Oh, listen.
Is something wrong, my dear?
Oh, I... No, it was nothing.
But, John, does it really matter that much?
Perhaps John has had something special prepared for me, Paul. That's very nice of him, and it will be quite all right.
Thank you, Dorothy. We scientists seem to understand each other, don't we?
Dorothy.
It's all right, Paul.
At this dinner and going to bed early tonight, we'll fix Dorothy up splendidly, Paul. Wait and see.
Suddenly, I had felt Ralph close to me again. He gave me a new confidence, a knowledge that whatever happened now, I was protected. I tasted nothing strange about the food, but I hadn't noticed anything in the meals before either. Ralph was waiting, I was sure now, until John became bold enough to spell his own destruction. The next afternoon, nothing could have kept me in the house. John had been in the laboratory all morning. And when I looked in, I noticed with a shudder that one of the operating tables was covered with clean white sheets. I went quickly out to the tree where I had been with Ralph the day before. It seemed a long time before I again felt that strange, numb feeling, as though my life had almost left my body. But...
Dorothy, my darling, you are here, under our tree.
How could I help coming, Ralph, when you promised that we'd be together again today?
I didn't promise, my dear. I couldn't promise that much. But remember, my darling, I am always near you.
Ralph! Ralph, where are you? You aren't here anymore. What was that? Let's back you out. Look. The grass is all beginning to burn and turn brown. Our tree is withering. Ralph! What was that? That great black mass coming toward me. John, where did you come from? I can only see your face staring at me out of that awful dark.
It's all right, isn't it, Dorothy? You're going to be all right. Oh. You said so last night. And you know it's true, don't you?
What's true? I don't know anything now. Where's Ralph? Oh, John, why are you fighting me this way? Ralph! Ralph!
You're going to be all right now, aren't you, Dorothy? All right now.
You're all right now, aren't you, Dorothy?
Oh, which one of those spells again, Mrs. Vance? I'm frightened.
Oh, Stuart and I came out to walk with you, Dorothy. We found you here again, just standing here, not seeing anything.
I'm going to call Mr. Paul. I don't like this. It frightens me. Mr. Paul will know what to do.
Shall we go back to the house, Dorothy? You'll feel better in a minute.
No, John. Let's just wait here a minute. Mrs. Stuart will be back with Paul.
but everything is ready at the house. I have some work waiting.
But, John, that darkness all around you. I can't see anything but your face again.
You will follow me back to the house, won't you, Dorothy? That's it. Of course you will.
Yes, John. Of course. I'll come with you. Everything here is brown and burnt. Park has grown so withered. It's horrible here now.
Come on, Dorothy. We'll go slowly. Come along with me. One step. One step. That's it. Come along with me.
Look at those birds over there. They're such big blackbirds. And they're falling. Dropping right into the sea. What's the matter with them, John? Why don't they come up again?
Don't be afraid of them, Dorothy. Just come with me. One step. One step.
And look. Those awful things. Snakes. Huge ones. And they're not moving. John, they're dead. Nothing here ever stays alive anymore. It's open and it's all dark in there. So dark I can't even see your face anymore. John, where are you?
Right here, Dorothy. Come up the stairs. One step. One step.
But everything is so confused. I can't find the stairs. I can't find anything. It isn't real. Everything is mixed up. I've lost something. I've lost something I can't remember.
We're almost there, Dorothy. One step. One step.
I can't remember. It was... Ralph! Ralph! Ralph, where are you? I'm afraid. I'm alone here in the darkness. There's no one here. Even John has gone away now, and there isn't any light. Ralph! Oh, Ralph. Oh, Ralph, you are near me. I can feel you're here now. I'm not alone.
It's near now. It's almost time, my darling. Here, let me hold your hand.
I can feel your hand on mine, Ralph. But I still can't see you. It's so dark in here.
Come on, Dorothy. The stairs are there. One step. One step.
Oh, Ralph, your hand is helping me along. Hold me tight.
In here, Dorothy. Right in here. This is where we'll work, isn't it?
It's the laboratory, Ralph. This horrible, evil-smelling laboratory. Ralph, I'm afraid. Why don't you speak to me?
Now we're all right, Dorothy. Now we'll work together, won't we?
I'm thirsty. I'm so terribly thirsty. That heat. The pot is so hot. It's all burned up. I'm thirsty.
Here, drink this, Dorothy. Oh. This will cure your thirst. You'll be all right. Nothing will hurt anymore.
I'm not afraid now, Ralph. I'm thirsty. Why can't I have a drink? It'll be all right.
That's right, Dorothy. Drink this. Let me hold it up to your lips.
I'm so thirsty. I'm going to... Don't adore me, Ralph!
What is... What is it? What happened? His hands are there.
Lord, what's got him?
He's choking to death. Something's strangling him.
John. He's dead.
Oh!
He was just holding that glass to your lips, Dorothy, when we came in, and suddenly it shook out of his hand as though someone had grabbed hold of his wrist. A powerful hand.
It was like as if a ghost had reached out and knocked that glass out of his hand.
Someone did, Paul. Ralph.
But no one was here. It couldn't have been...
Oh, Mrs. Zant.
I was protected. I knew I would be. Ralph was able to reach across and save me. Oh, I know it.
From the time-worn pages of the past, we have brought you The Ghost Touch. Bellkeeper, toll the bell.
The Weird Circle, on Tuned to Yesterday from 1945, a syndicated recording. You're listening to An Hour of Horror on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark LeVonier. Coming up next, one of Anton M. Leader's many triumphs on radio. It's the series Murder at Midnight. Following this run of programs, he would be named director of suspense while they were in the middle of their hour-long format on CBS, having already received radio's highest distinction, a Peabody Award, for his work with the Jewish storytelling program The Eternal Light, and produced NBC broadcasts of the acclaimed series Words at War. And like many illustrious radio careers, Anton M. Leader was not spared from an early gaffe that almost sent him out of the business. In his first radio job on the air, he was fired for mispronouncing the word meteorologist three times in the same newscast. Next, Murder at Midnight, under the direction of Leader, featuring the story The Man with the Black Beard, starring Mercedes McCambridge.
Your brother. They're both sleeping soundly under them. And the third one...
It's mine!
Midnight, the witching hour when the night is darkest, our fears the strongest, and our strength at its lowest ebb. Midnight. When the graves gape open and death strikes. How? You'll learn the answer in just a moment in The Man with the Black Beard. A few minutes before 12 o'clock, midnight, Charles Corbett is sleeping peacefully, but not his wife. Evelyn.
Oh. No. No, don't touch me.
There's no use running. You can't get away.
Please let me alone.
You mustn't be afraid, Evelyn.
You. That black beard. I've seen you before.
Of course you've seen me before. Everybody does. Sooner or later.
No! I don't want to see you! And I won't!
Scalpel, please.
What are you doing? You can't operate on me. You can't.
Just hold still. After this first incision, you won't feel anything.
No, there's nothing wrong with me. Let go of me.
No one's holding you. Get up.
I'm trying to. I can't.
No, Evelyn.
Your face. Your growing beard.
Yes, Evelyn.
A black beard. You're the man with the black beard who's been following me.
Yes, Evelyn.
No.
I'm afraid you're going to die. The prisoner will rise.
Prisoner?
I find you guilty. Guilty of trying to run away from the man with the black beard. You are sentenced to be guillotined.
No. No, please, I didn't do anything wrong.
Step up these stairs, please.
My husband. Let me call my husband.
No time for that. Raise the guillotine.
Please, give me
because you hate me. And for this you must die.
Before.
Hmm?
Charles, it means something.
When did you dream about him before?
I don't know. It was about a month ago.
Oh. Oh, yes. That was when I got my new job. That makes sense.
No. No, Charles, there's something else. I can't help feeling it. I can't help feeling that I'm going to die.
Don't say that, Evelyn.
No, I feel it in my bones, Charles. I'm certain. I'm going to die. Soon.
Corbett speaking.
Mr. Corbett, I'm glad I got you. Central Hospital's been trying to reach you.
Who?
Central Hospital.
Oh, they must have the wrong Corbett. I don't know anyone there.
Oh, they said it was about your wife.
My wife? What about her?
Well, she collapsed on the street, and they brought her into the hospital.
Okay. I'm going right over. Imagination.
No, Charles, it's not. It was the same man. I remember his face in every detail.
No, I don't see. Well, I guess we have to do something about this, darling. What can we do? Look. Suppose we go to see Dr. Lieber. He should be able to help you.
No. It's no use, Charles. He's after me. The man with the black beard. I'm going to die, Charles. I'm going to die.
Can you describe the man to me, Mrs. Corbett?
Yes, Doctor, I can. He has a long, narrow face, deep-set black eyes, and a black beard.
Had you ever seen him before, this... Before you dreamed of him?
No, I don't think so.
And you believe the man you saw in the street and the one you dreamed about are the same?
I know they are.
You say he nodded to you, as if he knew you.
Oh, he knew me, all right. He wants me to die.
You met him twice?
Yes, and both times he nodded.
I can understand your being afraid of him. But I think you also hate him. You do hate him, don't you?
Hate him? Doctor, I could kill him without even thinking twice about it.
I see.
What do you think, Dr. Lieber?
If she did not hate him, the explanation would be simple. She might have seen this man with the black beard before. She dreamed of him just passing in the street. And she could have had a nightmare about him. But hate, hate is important. Hating him the way she does, that means he has become a symbol to her.
A symbol? Then you don't believe he's a real person, do you? That he's really threatening me?
Not in the way you mean. What we'll have to do is to find out just what he does stand for.
But, Doctor, I tell you, I know what he stands for. He stands for death.
I'm not going to tell you to forget him, Mrs. Corbett, because you won't. But if you'll come back again tomorrow, well, we'll see if we can't find out a little more about him.
Why, Charles, what are you doing here?
Waiting for you, darling. We're going to have lunch together.
You mean you'd like to take a look at the man with the black beard?
Well, yes. Look, you say you met him right here on the street corner.
Yes, right here. Twice. Oh, Charles, are you doing this because you believe me or because you don't believe me? Or is it because you think I've gone mad?
Oh, my dearest, what a question.
Well, maybe he won't show up today.
Well, then I'll try again.
Yes, and maybe that I can see him, and maybe you can't. Maybe it's just a... There. Coming towards us.
Well, I'll be... Oh, just as you described it.
Then you do see him.
How do you do?
He spoke to me. He never did that before.
He's getting into that car. Hey, you! Wait, I want to talk to you.
He isn't paying any attention, Charles. He's driving away.
Can't let him get away. Taxi! Come on.
Yes.
Taxi! Here, inside, Evelyn, quick.
All right.
Glad you, bud.
Follow that black car. We've got to see where he goes.
Listen, mister, how much longer are we going to keep tailing this guy? We're way outside the city limits.
Yeah, we're going to tail him until we find out where he's going. You haven't lost him, have you?
No, he can't go much further because this road... Hey, he's turning off.
Huh?
Into the cemetery.
What? What did you say?
The Cypress Cemetery. He's going in.
Well, step on it, will you? I've got to catch him.
Don't worry. There's just this one road, and the entrance gate's on the other side of this curve. There's an attendant there. He'll have to stop and show a pass or something. Holy smoke.
He's gone. Hey, stop at that gate, will you?
Yes, sir.
Excuse me, we're looking for a big black car that just came through here.
Black car? There hasn't been a car through here for an hour.
You see, Sergeant Charles, you see, I told you.
Stop it, Evelyn.
I told you.
Stop it. Look, there must have been one. We followed it all the way from town. A man with a black beard was driving it.
Mister, I say there hasn't been a car through here for an hour, with or without a beard.
A man with a black beard and a black car vanishing into thin air at the gates of a cemetery. But then, where would you expect a trail to end that began with a nightmare? A dream of...
murder! At midnight!
We find Evelyn deep in another terrifying encounter with the man who haunts her day and night.
Evelyn...
You again? What are you doing here?
Waiting for you.
No.
You were looking for me, remember? You and your husband, right here in the cemetery.
No, I've got to get up. This is just another dream. It's a nightmare.
Is it?
Yes.
Look at me. I'm very real. Here, touch me. Pursuing me.
It's a lie. I hate you.
Naturally. I have a surprise for you.
I don't want to see your surprise. Oh, I've got to wake up. I've got to.
First, you must look at my surprise.
Look there, right in front of you.
Tombstones. Three of them.
The first one is your mother's.
Oh.
The second is your brother's. And the third one, do you recognize that?
It's my own.
Can you read the inscription?
Oh.
It says, Evelyn Corbett, beloved wife. Simple, but dignified.
No, it's horrible. It's horrible.
Now, if you kindly step down into your grave, our business will be finished.
No, I won't do it. I won't. I don't want to die.
I'm afraid I must insist.
No, no, I won't.
This time, you can't help yourself, even by waking up.
No.
This time, in you go.
Evelyn! What are you doing on the floor? What is it?
Oh.
Darling, what's the matter?
It was he again.
Who?
It was the man with the black beard. He threw me into my grave.
Oh, no, darling. You fell off the bed, that's all.
Oh,
here. Here, darling, let me help you up. Back on the bed. There.
Oh, Charles. Oh, Charles, if this keeps up, I'll go out of my mind.
I know, darling.
Oh, Charles, do something. You just got to do something.
You say you actually saw him, this man with the black beard, Mr. Corbett?
I certainly did. He looked just as Evelyn described him to.
And he disappeared at the cemetery?
Yes, Doctor, he did.
Well, that isn't so mysterious. He might have gone off on a side road or something like that.
But he didn't, Doctor. He just vanished. Into thin air.
Mrs. Corbett, I want you to try to remember how many times you've dreamt about him. Now, it's important.
Yes. Three times.
Are you sure?
Well, I think I am.
When was the last time someone close to you died?
Died? About 6 years ago.
Who was it?
It was my brother. My only brother.
Were you very fond of him?
Yes.
Did you have nightmares then?
Well, Yes, I think so.
Did you dream about the man with the black beard then?
I'm not sure.
Think back.
No, I can't remember. I have a feeling that I did. Only I can't be too certain.
It will come to you. Maybe not now, maybe tomorrow or the day after. Let me know immediately when it does.
I don't get this, Doctor. What has that got to do with the immediate problem?
A great deal, Mr. Corbett.
But the man with the beard is a real person.
No, he isn't. He isn't a real person.
But he was
no,
there.
I think he's dead. Hunting for me.
I see. Of course, one way we can prove he's not is to get hold of him. Talk to him.
Well, I'll take that job. I'll find him. And when I do, he's going to do a lot of talking. Hello.
Mr. Corbett?
Yes?
Oh, this is the office calling. The boss wants you to investigate a new case.
Yeah.
The body of a Mr. Hampton was found in the river today. He was heavily insured, and they want you to go down to the city morgue to look at the body as soon as possible.
Okay, I'll go down right now. Goodbye. When was that body fished out of the river?
Several hours ago.
Uh-huh. Okay. Put the sheet back.
So what do you think? Murder, suicide, or accident?
Well, I don't know yet. Hey! Hey, there he is! Here!
He? Who?
The man with the black beard. He just walked out of the slab room.
I didn't notice.
Hey, wait a minute! Oh, gone. He must have taken the elevator. Ring. Oh, I've got to find that guy. Come on.
Okay, watch your step.
Did you just take down a man with a black beard?
No, sir.
But you must have. He came out of here just a minute ago.
Well, maybe he walked down. It's only two flights.
Oh? Where are the stairs?
Right over there.
Okay, I'll see.
Hello?
Hello, Dr. Lieber?
Yes?
This is Charles Corbett.
Anything wrong?
I just saw the man with a black beard again.
You did? Where?
Down at the morgue.
Did you talk to him?
No, he disappeared. I ran after him, but he just vanished.
That's too bad.
We've got to get a hold of him, Doctor.
Perhaps we can meet him at the street corner near my wife's office. She's seen him there several times.
I have a very heavy schedule, but when's the best time?
About 1 o'clock.
I'll be there.
Look, should I have Evelyn come too?
Yes, that might be a good idea.
Good. Maybe we can clear this up today.
Charles, I'm afraid.
There's no reason to be afraid, dear. I'm with you, and Dr. Labor will be here any minute.
Yes, well, if I see him again, I don't know what'll happen.
Nothing will happen. Believe me, darling. Look, once we talk to him... Here he comes.
Where, Charles?
Right there. Dr. Labor.
Oh, I thought you... You startled me.
Hello.
I'm glad you could come, Doctor.
And I'm terrified. Doctor, do we have to do this?
It's the quickest way of getting to the bottom of it. What time have we got, Mr. Corbett?
I have 5 to 1.
Yes, it's just about the time he passes by.
I hope he doesn't keep us waiting too long.
Dr. Lieber, really, you've been wonderful about this whole thing. If it hadn't been for you and Charles, I don't...
What is it, Mrs. Corbett? What's the matter?
Look, over there.
It's he.
He really does have a black beard.
I've got to get away. I've got to get away.
Stay here. Nothing's going to happen to you.
He's coming over here.
Good.
Oh, don't let him touch me. Don't.
Please, Mrs. Corbett.
Good afternoon.
How do you do, sir?
I believe you are the people who are looking for me.
How did you know that?
The guard out at the cemetery told me. He described you and the lady perfectly. Oh, look out.
I've got her. Evelyn.
She's fainted. Evelyn, better take her someplace quiet where she can...
My place is just up the street there, a few doors. If it won't bother you too much, we...
Of course not. Show us.
Here we are.
But this... This is... It says Blakely's Funeral Parlor.
Yes, I'm Mr. Blakely.
An undertaker?
Yes, a mortician.
Of course. This is finally beginning to make sense. Put it down on the couch there, Corbett.
Make sense? How?
Do you know Mrs. Corbett, Mr. Blakely?
I've seen her a few times in the street. We seem to have lunch at about the same time. She stared at me, and I assume she knew me, so I nodded to her.
You've had no other dealings with her?
Not that I know of, no.
What was your wife's maiden name, Corbett?
Huh? Harper. Why?
Would you look that name up in your files, Mr. Blakely?
Why, yes, of course. Let me see. Hadley Halton. Harper. Cecilia M. Died January 26, 1926. Buried at...
Why, that was her mother.
And that's the answer. She loved her mother very much.
Very much. Yes, she was only 6 years old at the time, but she always
six.
Said...
An age of deep feeling, without any real understanding of cause and effect. Her mother died, and Mr. Blakely came and took her away. As a result, she attributed her death to him. He came to represent death to her, and thus became an object of terror and hatred.
But I don't understand. After all these years...
She didn't remember him consciously because she wanted to forget about him. But the subconscious mind never forgives or forgets. She must have seen him in the street without really being aware of it. Then her subconscious mind went to work, started creating those nightmares.
And you think that when we tell her all this and we explain...
I'm sure of it.
Yes, but doctor, how can we explain the attendant at the cemetery and the guy at the morgue? You know, they said they hadn't seen him.
Now that we know that Mr. Blakely, the bearded man, is an undertaker, a mortician, the explanation is simple. He was such a familiar figure at the cemetery and the morgue that his presence did not quite register on their conscious mind. Just as we never notice our waiter at a restaurant.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes, of course. I see.
Now, let me take a look at her. She should be coming to now. And...
Good Lord. What is it? Doctor, what's the matter?
I don't seem to find any pulse. I'm afraid. The strain and the shock.
You mean... You mean...
I'm afraid she is, Mr. Corbett. After all, when we believe someone to be death, they can be death.
Dead of fear, created in her own mind, lying on a couch in a funeral parlor. the logical place to end a story that began with a nightmare. A terrifying dream of murder! Again, when death steps smiling from behind a tombstone, and the clocks strike 12 for murder at midnight. The part of Evelyn Corbett was played by Mercedes McCambridge, with music by Charles Paul. Murder at Midnight was directed by Anton M. Leader.
Murder at Midnight, on Tuned to Yesterday from November 8, 1946, a syndicated recording. And that wraps this hour of horror on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great programs from radio's golden age. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark Levonier. It's been a pleasure.